The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
How are you, sir?
This is Pierre.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you, Dr. Ray the Great.
Well, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Trying to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
I don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Big screen radio, high definition radio, pulchritudinous, mellifluous, pugnacious, truculent. That's about as high definition as you're going to get describing me. Well, I know about the pulchritudinous one. The pugnacious and truculent, that could fit. Mellifluous, sweet sounding, borderline. We'll see. I'm Dr. Ray Grandy. Thanks for joining me here. Doctor Is In, E-Person Monday. Once again, I don't say email. I just don't. It's wrong. It's really, really very narrow, linguistically speaking. You know, it's just kind of assuming there's no e-females. E-female. And you can't even say female because it's got male in it. You know, you were going to start eliminating syllables. Pretty soon, I can't even say e-person because it's got son in it. So it's going to be EP Monday. Which is a derivative of Moon's Day. What we do here is we take some e-persons who come in. Well, you can't say who come in. They're not really a who. Which come in over the weeks. Some of them looking back. I'm going back here. This one's August 15th. So it's a while back because I'm always trying to catch up with what's there. So we'll get to those. I love to read them. And it's fun because I choose them for various reasons to make it to E-Person Monday. But I forget how it ends up. And I read a sentence or two or three or four, and then I make a comment. I interrupt, like I do on the radio show. I interrupt. And then I predict a little bit about where this is headed. And as I continue to read, I like to see where it's headed and if I'm right. Some might say, well, the conclusion's reverberating in your head somewhere, even if unconsciously you're going to know you're going to hit it. I like not to think about that. I like to think that I'm perspicacious, which is another form of high-definition radio. Parent will walk into my office over the course of our visiting. They will describe a number of rebellious or resistant or oppositional or defiant types of behaviors. Disrespect, perhaps tormenting siblings, resisting parents' rules regarding technology. They'll describe a situation that's unpleasant. It's untenable. It's just not a smooth parent-child environment. About 50% of the time, they will say something akin to this. I think I'm giving you the wrong impression. Overall, he's a pretty good kid. And I will ask, how so? And they will say something again akin to, well, he's not on drugs or anything like that. He's not on drugs. One of the new moral high bars. This is virtue by comparison. I mean, the parents have told me how difficult this kid is to live with. And again, I'm hesitant when I say stuff like that because we tend to look at the kid and say, why are you so difficult? Instead of looking at ourselves and saying, okay, how am I allowing all this difficulty? That's a lot of times a heavy factor. But when they say, I'm giving you the wrong impression, he's really a good kid, he's not on drugs, he's not in trouble with the law, he gets good grades, he hasn't run away, hasn't kicked a hole in the wall. I call it the Jerry Springer effect. Now, Jerry has passed away. But one of the theories about why people are so attracted to those afternoon reality shows that talk about all of this craziness in relationships is the sense of, oh, I'm not as bad as that guy. Oh, you know, I got my problems, but oh, those people are nuts. Yes, virtue by comparison. We do that with kids. He's not as bad as so much of the other stuff that's gone out there, gone on out there. That's not the question, is it? Not how does he compare with others who may be more troubled. How does he compare with what you're trying to impart, what you're trying to live with? I don't want to compare my kids to much of the culture out there. 3% of people, according to a recent survey, enter marriage as virgins. Well, I'd like my kids to be one of those 3%. Less than a couple percent don't have smartphones at age 15. I would want my kid to be one of those. Virtue by comparison, you can really lax your parenting up. That's pretty easy to do. Well, he gets good grades. I mean, he's not flunking or anything like that. What's he getting? He gets B's and C's. Ever had an IQ test done on him? Oh, yeah. Oh, he had an IQ test in the fourth grade. He is really, really bright. I mean, his IQ is like 132. So he's capable of straight A's. Well, yeah, if you put his mind to it, yeah. But you see, we're accepting B's and C's. Why? Well, because that's not too bad. Yeah, it's not too bad child raising. What I call it. I ask parents, what do you want to raise? You want to raise a kid who, by comparison, is pretty good? To what else is going on out there? Because if you're a faith-filled parent and you're trying to follow Christ and you're trying to live a moral life, then comparing to anybody else is kind of foolish. You compare it to what you want to teach. You don't want a kid who mouths off, do you? You don't want to say, as all your friends are telling you, oh, I know, I'll tell you, when they hit to be 14 or 15, they get so snotty. My son was just delightful up until about 11 or 12, and then all of a sudden he just got this attitude. Well, is that what you want? Is you want to be able to say, well, compared to most 14-year-olds, she's not too snotty. Well, do you want her to be any snotty? Virtue by consensus. Virtue by comparison. If you want to raise a faith-filled kid, you're really not going with the measure of the culture. That's irrelevant to you. They don't have the same goals as you do. They tolerate an awful lot they shouldn't tolerate. And that's why so many of them say in the end, what happened? What happened? I thought we were going along fine. Now my kid doesn't even talk to me. So, the Jerry Springer effect, I'm not as bad as that guy, is a very bad way to parent. I take it a step further. Very bad way to live. I'm Dr. Ray.
I feel better!
Dr. Ray has more great advice coming up. Don't go anywhere.
Because I'm a doctor, that's how I know.
Steve Ray here. Next year's a jubilee year, and we're going to celebrate it in Rome. But not only Rome. This is our Saints and Shrines of Italy pilgrimage, and joining us is our good friend Teresa Tamio.
Yes, Steve, fantastico. Walking through the holy doors, immersing ourselves in the deeply Catholic culture of Italy. I'll be joining you and Janet in Florence and Assisi.
Join us this May for the Jubilee year, from Milan to Florence and much more, all the way to Rome.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
My daughter told me she was published in a scientific journal as an undergrad. I'm so proud of her. The world needs Catholic physicists, and my daughter's going to be one of them.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Did you know my mom's gonna have a baby?
We heard the heartbeat and my dad said this is gonna be someone very special.
Hello, my name is Marianne Koharski. I'm the director of Pro-Life Across America. We hope you'll consider supporting the work of Pro-Life Across America. Your gift will help offer life-saving alternatives to those in need. Visit our website at prolifeacrossamerica.org or like us on Facebook.
Pro-Life Across America.
Thank you so much for joining me here on The Doctor's Inn. This is E-Person Monday. I'm going to be diving into the mailboxes right here. Let me see where I'm going on this one. This is one that can't be answered. But it can be commented on. Why am I uncomfortable, anxious, claustrophobic? Fear of closed spaces or fear of things squishing in on you, and unhappy at Mass. I am 81 with a bad back, a limp, and I tire quickly. I don't like crowds, and Mass is not fulfilling. Well, there could be a whole lot of details on that. You have to start peeling back where some of that's coming from and where it's been, how long it's built up. Would offer a few things, sir. Not surprisingly, if you're in poor health and you're in pain and you tire quickly, yeah, Mass would be tough. Be tough. This is a very practical kind of suggestion. I'm not going to try to get you over your anxiety because I don't know what the root of it is and I don't know how long it's been going on. Sit in a place, if you have to get yourself a nice little comfortable folding chair, the back of the church, where you can be comfortable. And you're not in a pew where the threat is it'll get crowded and people will squish in on you. Just nice little chair. Sit there. But here's the big one. What you're doing by going to Mass when you feel this way, uncomfortable, anxious, claustrophobic, even unhappy. What you're doing by going to Mass anyway is heroic. Certainly. It's not something that lifts you up, Maybe it will as you continue to go, but or maybe you have all your life and you're finding out that as you get older, it's getting harder and harder to get there. I don't know. I don't know what the physical issues are. I do know, though, that if you go anyway and you say, Lord, I'm feeling unfulfilled. I'm highly anxious here. But because it's you, I want to be with you. I want to come. I was talking to Dr. Peter Kreef one time, and he said, he gave the example of an individual, and I don't remember the exact details, so I may have to shift some of them to make the point of the story. He gave the example of your spouse who is ill and needs something quickly to help, and you run to the drugstore in pouring rain late at night. You put your clothes back on because you had long since settled in for the night, and you go, and you do it because you love your spouse and you want to do it. On the other hand, let's say that it is someone that you don't like. Pick someone. You're either living with them or they call you. Same situation. Raining, cold, late at night. You go do it. Your motive is to help them, but it's harder to do that because everything in you says, I don't want to do that, but I will because it's the good thing to do. Well, dear sir, if you go to Mass, when you feel like that, when you think like that, when everything in you is kind of resisting, but you go anyway, you say, Lord, it's the least I can do for you. I'll tell you what, I think you get a lot more grace doing that than I do. Because I'm not claustrophobic at Mass. I'm not anxious. I'm not unhappy. I'm not unfulfilled. Nope. Oh, I may drift off in my attention quite a bit, but overall, I'm not. So for you to do that is a more grace-filled movement, my friend. Look at it that way. See what we got here from this young lady. Did I go to that one? No, that was... I did that one. All right. Scroll down here. I did that one too. What is wrong with me? One more, then I will go to my stack here. We'll give it one more try on the phone. Brief summary. 24-year-old dependent daughter. First admission, 2021. Very low doses of antipsychotic drugs. Off within weeks. In other words, she quit taking them with very little therapy by choice. Second admission, 24 days ago, with high doses of antipsychotic drugs, with side effects. Oh, so my first question would be, okay, what's going on that she's getting antipsychotic drugs? Is she floridly psychotic? Is she losing touch with reality? Is she getting very confused? Is she getting delusional? Is she hearing voices? What is this? Okay. Had to decrease or totally withdraw some of the medications. No psychotherapy. The diagnosis, quote, unspecified psychosis. Okay, so apparently she was exhibiting psychotic symptoms. No prior or current history of recreational drugs. A high school friend although not so close, committed suicide. She was admitted for a third time yesterday. Hoo-hoo. They said since the meds did not work and the symptoms got worse, delusions, changes in voice, lack of sleep, maybe she's running through a manic phase, concentration, threat to harm herself or others, her diagnosis is schizophrenia. Progress, lifelong antipsychotic drugs. Well, okay, schizophrenia and unspecified psychosis, the language here is can be similar, can be the same. What seems to be clear is she's having a psychotic break, and the first one occurred, let's see, when she was 21. Not unusual. All right. Don't know much about the history. Was she reasonably well-adjusted prior to that? Was there a quirkiness prior to that, some odd thinking, odd conduction of behavior? What? And then it became a full-blown psychosis. Question. Is a collaborative team approach, person-centered empathic psychotherapy with little or no drugs, better than a somewhat collaborative psychopharmacological approach and psychotherapy? I'm not quite sure what is meant by a collaborative team approach, person-centered, empathic. Although, I will say this. Research indicates that if someone has had psychotic breaks, and it appears, and again, I don't know how much she's sticking with her meds. But if she's sticking with her meds and she's still deteriorating, then they're going to have to do some experimenting with meds. They got a lot of options. Experimenting with a diagnosis. The therapy would involve her coming to understand her symptoms and coming to live better with that diagnosis and with the complications that that diagnosis brings. I mean, she hears voices. That makes it definitely makes it harder to keep employment. All right. Or if you become paranoid, well, you think your boss is looking at you in a certain way. It's going to make you quit. So psychotherapy would help in the understanding of those symptoms, but it won't help much in dispelling those symptoms. The best we have, even though it ain't perfect, is the drugs. Not against Catholic teaching at all. Catholic teaching would say medication of all types, if they are meant to restore the person to their natural functioning, are not only perfectly fine and acceptable, they are good. So in this case, the combination of antipsychotic meds and therapy is probably the best course of action. Yeah. Ouch. That's a helpless feeling when you have a child that enters late teens, early 20s, which is really the more common times when this kind of break will occur. And whether or not it's a lifelong existence really depends. It's hard to predict. But one indication is if there are recurrent exacerbations, meaning worsenings, then with each one, it becomes a little more likely this could be a chronic condition.
So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Nothing illustrates the powerful bond between man and wife intended by God, the creator of marriage, than these words from Matthew's gospel. A true marriage is a sacramental bond and is therefore indissoluble. The Catholic Catechism, however, realistically acknowledges that the presence of evil can severely strain this bond. Marital union has always been threatened by discord, a spirit of domination, jealousy, infidelity, and conflicts that can escalate into hatred and separation. The original communion of Adam and Eve was ruptured by their sin of disobedience. Their relations were distorted by mutual recrimination, says the Catechism, and brought about the pain of childbirth and the toil of work. Without God's help, a man and woman cannot achieve the union of their lives for which God created them in the beginning. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Christ is the Answer with Father John Ricardo.
You know, maybe we need to ask ourselves, do we really know Jesus? Maybe another way to ask that would be, how familiar are you with the Gospels? When I was living in D.C., I was on the plane taking a late flight home, sitting next to a young girl. She was probably 16, 17. I had my collar on, and we got talking, and she said somehow in the course of the conversation, she acknowledged that she was running away from home and was in the midst of an awful lot of difficulties that were going on. Her story seemed to be remarkably akin to the story of the prodigal son, which we just heard this past Sunday at Mass, huh? And so I started to speak a little bit about that with her. And I said, you sound a little bit like the younger son in the story of the prodigal son. And she looked at me like I was from Mars. And I said, are you not familiar with the story of the prodigal son? And she says, no, never heard it. And I just looked at her and I says, oh my goodness, are you in for a wonderful evening?
I was talking to Eric Dumont during the break. And typically when I address an e-person, I will send an email to... Oh, I slipped up. I will send a responsive e-person to the individual who wrote the letter, telling them that just your e-person. And if you miss it, you can go to the Ave Maria Radio archives. And no matter how much I am careful, and I add punctuation, typically talk to text misses the punctuation. For example, I can't get it to connect to E person Monday. No matter how much I pause, it says each person or some variant thereof. And then that's understandable because it's certainly not used to E person. But I've been saying E person for years. Whoever does my dictating inside this little phone doesn't get it. But it says e-person and then comma Monday. Well, there's no comma between person and Monday. And I feel compelled to correct it. When most people send texts or emails, they just blow through it and they're not really worried about the punctuation. Doesn't matter. I have this scrupulosity regarding English. I don't know if it's left over from my sixth grade teacher, Mrs. Elgis, who bludgeoned my papers. She didn't worry about them being filled with red ink. Looked like they were in a knife fight. No. But it's left over. It's residual. I can't send out a text or an e-person generally. And sometimes I do, but generally I have to go back and I got to make sure all the punctuation is correct because I don't want to look sloppy. Dr. Ray, when I was in high school, we're going to find out how far back that was. My parents organized a talk at my school from this Catholic psychologist from the radio. All right. I suspect that was me. He doesn't say where, he doesn't say when, but it was way back. At some point during the week, now, I don't remember if I gave up a series of talks. I don't know why it went to at some point during the week. He told my parents I might have a motivation problem. And I, of course, did what any healthy and well-adjusted teenage guy would do. And I got defensive and denied it for over 20 years. Okay, so apparently I had visited with his parents over 20 years ago. Well, I don't think that was me, because I was, what, sophomore in college? Well, maybe not quite. He says, I'm finally starting to come around and take a page out of this Humility Award-winning psychologist playbook and realize I might have been wrong. I realize that the only time in my life I have really thrived and self-motivated and chased my dreams was after an event after which I nearly died. Wow. And had to relearn how to walk. That's a big accident. And you hope most people don't have to have something of that kind of trauma to get them to take a look at themselves. I don't want to have to go through that again. You might not survive it. But now that I'm admitting this, that this radio host might have been right, you should have known that, Dan. Come on. Shouldn't have taken you 20 years. What on earth do I do about this motivational inconsistency issue? And then he closes with, thank you in advance. This is a great one. And apologies for writing you off for 20 plus years. Hey, are you saying I've been around 20 plus years doing this? That's only about half of the time I've been around doing this. First step toward change is insight. You got to acknowledge, I do that. And not only do I do it, but it causes me problems. Now, once you got those two in place, you're more likely to say, what should I do now, even though it's not my first impulse? Well, let's say, for example, you're in a job that's kind of unfulfilling, doesn't pay the greatest. What's keeping you from moving out of it? Why are you not looking for other jobs? Oh, I suppose we could look for reasons. You know, I'm too insecure. I feel comfortable where I am, and I don't know with where I'm going. I'll feel comfortable, and I can't really predict what the job's going to be like. You could do all that. But at root, the question is, I just don't want to do it. So often, we don't do what is good for us because we don't want to. If honestly you look at yourself and you say, that's my main motive, I just don't want to, then you ask the next question. How does that serve me? How will that help me? I find that in my own life, so much of what is good for me, I don't initially want to do. I've lifted weights for over 50 years. As I get older, it's not the same excitement. Matter of fact, it's something that I say, okay, I better go. But I know it's good for me. Very good for me. It's good for everybody. Lifting weights is huge for overall health and longevity. Healthy longevity. But if I just simply listen to my motivation, would it be so easier not to go today? Gee, I mean, I'm already at home. I know enough to know that that does not serve me well at all. And I know enough to know that later on I'll say, why did I do that? Why did I give in? Much of good motivation is acting counter to your impulse, acting counter to your habit, the way you've kind of always been, the way you've always done it. When you don't feel like doing something good, that is the best sign that you should do it. I'm a little hurt that it took you 20 years to realize I was right. And there's a lot of people that don't ever think I'm right. They quit listening, which it sounds like what you did. And I would be curious to know how you started listening again. Jeez, I'm sad that you had to have such a vicious accident to make you say, okie dokie, I better rethink some things. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In on this Variant E-Person Monday with my producer man, Eric Dumont, over there in Ave Maria Radio, a co-production of Ave and EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network. Very, very nice to be associated with all those folks.
Father Benedict Rochelle.
There are legitimate differences of opinion in any religion. There are differences of opinion in Catholicism. But in Catholicism, you expect that people will take the teaching of its supreme authority seriously. To go diametrically opposed to those teachings is to not be a Catholic. Someone in the name of Catholicism is sponsoring the destruction of human life, lives of unborn children. And he got the name Catholic on the door. The highest authority in Catholicism and the encyclical Humanae Vitae, Evangelium Vitae, is absolutely clear that no Catholic can support abortion and that Catholics are responsible to take serious action against legalized abortion.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN. Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
We're living in such a divisive country right now. So much cancelization on social media, so many attacks, so much vitriol. Not to mention, people may be concerned for their own safety because it's been shown over and over again that people do not want to hear a different opinion and some can get violent with it. So they're scared. Results from every generation reveal a double-digit gap between what people are willing to say publicly and what they think privately. So while about 1 in 4 Americans say they trust the media, only about 1 in 14 truly trust the news they're being fed. It looks like a lot of people are in line with those of us who also distrust the media, and more than we even realize, according to this latest report.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Dear Dr. Ray, I listen to your program almost daily. Shoot, I don't listen to my program almost daily. I've been wanting to call about a particular problem. Here it is. I have two adult children living with me, ages 23, 24, who were both adopted at the same time, at age 1 and 2.5. Fast forward. My husband and my children's father died 1 year ago suddenly. I think she means my children's father, not my children's biological father. Okay. At the time, this was 1 year ago, my daughter was in an abusive relationship and was pregnant. About 6 weeks after the birth of her child was removed from her custody and placed with a relative of the father. You know, my guess would be it was the father's mom. That's very often what it is. It's usually the parents. I was not in a good place to assume custody of her at the time. The death of my husband, and I was still working full time. Further, my daughter and I do not always get along, and often our conversations turn into yelling matches. Okay, stop right there. Whenever you say something turns into a match, well, that means you're partaking in it. Now, you may say, well, yeah, but I don't start it. Well, yeah, but I'm the reasonable one. Well, yeah, but I'm trying to talk sense. No, it doesn't matter. If you're yelling and it's a match, then that's what's making it a match. Two people yelling. She and my husband were close. Now, I would bet, now I could be wrong here, Mom, but I would bet that your husband didn't get into yelling matches with her. And probably didn't try to direct her. He did less of that. When you did it, she resisted it. She fought back. You got frustrated. And the cycle went on. My question is, how do I communicate with her? Well, whew, that's a pretty broad question. I just give you a few pointers. Quit yelling. And I guess in a lot of ways, quit trying to reason with her when it appears she doesn't want to be reasoned with. You may be forced to communicate with her just kind of superficially, at least to let the relationship sort of heal. She tends to revert back to being a teenager. Well, what you're saying is that she, bottom line is, she doesn't think real maturely. She wants me to try and get temporary custody of her now 9-month-old baby. I'm willing to do that for her. But I don't want the baby to be exposed to the chaos. I'm considering not pursuing this until she and I can speak calmly, respectively, and kindly towards each other. Well, there's nothing stopping you from doing that. If you're saying, well, it's hard to speak calmly and respectfully and kindly to her when she starts. Well, yeah, but that's because you're responding point for point, whatever it is that is provoking your comebacks. Regarding, here's where I'm unclear. They've got custody. This relative has custody. I don't think you would have much leverage. I may be wrong. You have to talk to a lawyer about this. I don't think you'd have much leverage on changing custody. Your daughter might. Your daughter may be able to make the case in the court that I am going to do the things I need to do to show that I'm a responsible mother. Because she would have a stronger right to raising the child than a more distant relative, i.e. a grandparent, sounds like. She can't afford to live on her own. She'll have to live with me. Yeah, if she gets custody. I don't want to raise my granddaughter, but I'm willing to help out. Well, there's a couple of things here. Do you think, I mean, your daughter lost custody. Do you think she's gotten her life under decent enough control that she could make the case that I can raise this child responsibly? Do you think that? Also, do you think that, you said you don't want to raise a child, but do you think that if your daughter lives with you and can't afford to live elsewhere, will there be a time when she could? Or will it be something that you are involved with on a day-to-day basis indefinitely? These are all questions you got to consider. I think the least question is the yelling match question. Because what you're really saying is, when my daughter does this, it provokes me. Maybe reasonably so, but you get unreasonable. You yell and you scream and you argue back with her and you get on her level. What makes you think that's going to change? If she doesn't see anything wrong with what she's doing and how she talks, then why would you expect she's going to change? So I'm not telling you what to do. That's your decision. But these are all questions you could ask yourself to make this decision. And it seems that the longer that child is in the custody of that relative of the birth dad, the harder it will be for her to get custody, because that child will have started forming some strong attachments. And she'd have to make, your daughter would have to make a very significant case that she's now a different person than the one who lost custody. She's willing to do whatever it takes, which would include getting along with her mother. Thank you for joining me. I'm Dr. Ray.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 40 years of experience, 17,000 current students, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plan, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right, pretty much everything. My wife and I use Seton, some of our children. Tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. Over 30% higher on English and reading on the ACT. It's a rigorous program. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. That is SetonHome.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I want you to have such confidence in the Lord that you'll find such hope and see the beauty of the Lord, the majesty of God. What did our Lord say, huh? If your sins are as scarlet, oh, what? What's going to happen? They shall be made white as snow.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
That's it, Eric. That is all you're going to give me of that incredibly fast finger moving jazz organist? Huh. That's it. You're the boss. Hi, Dr. Ray. I recently lost a close family member to cancer. I had cared for this person for several years during their illness. Since then, about 6 months ago, I have become increasingly reclusive. I will make plans with friends, but when the time comes, I find I just don't want to go. Oh, this goes back to the motivation question I had a couple of e-persons ago. I don't want to. If I force myself to participate, I just feel like I want to get away. I don't even want, there's that word, want. We do so much because of what we want or don't want, as opposed to whether it's good for us. I don't even want to talk on the phone to friends and family members. Sometimes I don't even feel like making conversation with my spouse or children. I'm going to guess that this is someone who took care of a mother or father. How long should I allow myself? This is a fair question. How long should I allow myself to indulge these reclusive tendencies? On one hand, it's understandable. If this was the closest person to you who has ever passed away, and you were integrally involved for the past several years in their life, then your grief process is more potent than anything you imagined. Okay, that's a given. All right, got that. And in response to the grief process, you may say, I just want to retreat for a while. Okay. But there's two things that are throwing up red flags here. One is, it sounds like it's getting worse. We don't even want to talk to people. And two, it's been 6 months. Now you might say, well, 6 months, that's not very long in a grief process. That's true. Not very long in a grief process. But it might be getting long in a process of I don't want to be around anybody. Well, there's nothing that says you can't do what you're doing. The question is it good for you? You said, if I force myself to participate, I just feel like I want to get away. I just feel like I want to get away. Is that a good feeling? And I guess my question is, if you're in counseling with me, I'd say, well, how often do you act on that feeling? Okay, so you feel like you want to get away. Do you get away or do you stay there until the event's over? Because eventually, there are going to be a few things that are rewarding and positive when you stay in a situation that you know is good for you, but you don't want to be there. You're waiting for that to happen, and it will. You may be saying to yourself, because this person passed away, I feel like the main motive, the main goal, the main direction of my life is over. As a person of faith, that thought is wrong. I'm going to tell you that. You are asked to be charitable and kind and reaching out and in any respect sociable to those you love, those left here with you. You are. And if you say, I don't want to, once again, we're back to the motivational problem. I don't want to stops a lot of people from doing what is good, not only for others, but for themselves. Do not use want as your reason. Ask yourself every time, would this be good for me? But Dr. Ray, I'm uncomfortable with it. I don't like it. I'm uncomfortable. I just have to force myself through it. Okay. Is that a problem? Because ultimately, you will see, you'll break the reclusive tendency. At the very least, you're not being reclusive. You may not like not being reclusive, but you're not being reclusive. That's big. Do what is good. If you used to do this, if this was more who you were than now, then in fact you're going against your natural self. And you're creating a rut that goes deeper and deeper and harder to climb out of. And the last thing you want to do is to not have any kind of consistently warm interaction with your spouse or your kids. That's not cool. Fake it. Look like you're immersed in it. Look like you're enjoying it. Don't let yourself just be drift off and give one sentence answers and can't wait to run away from the conversation. That may be your instinct. Act counter to it. So often doing what is good for us in the long run, even in the short run, is acting counter to our impulse. My impulse is not to go. My impulse is to break off this conversation. Well, that's your impulse. Is it a good one? Questions to ask. Well, got to go. Don't have a whole lot of seconds left. Well, I suppose I could talk more about that, but I would just be repeating myself. This is The Doctor Is In. Good Lord permitting. We'll see you tomorrow, where we can inter-ear. Not face-to-face, that's television. Thank you, Eric Dumont, for being on that end over there at Ave. And thanks to you folks for keeping me company. I appreciate the e-persons, and I appreciate getting the chance to be with you. Walk with God. Don't be reclusive about that one.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.